Florida's primary election brought us some surprising results and set up a competitive field as we head to the races in November. We'll take a close look on our monthly Reporters Roundtable. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the National Foundation for Transplants. Right now, hundreds of Tampa residents need an organ transplant they can't afford. You can join National Foundation for Transplants Operation Second Chance at transplants.org to learn how to help give someone a second chance at life.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Robin Sussingham. I'm here with William March, longtime political analyst and journalist, and Zach Anderson, political editor of the Sarasota Herald Tribune. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Robin.
Hey, Robin.
Well, the state's primary election was August 28th, and let's start out today by looking at some of the more interesting local races and talk about what you'll be watching for in the general election this November. William March, you had a column recently in the Tampa Bay Times with the headline, "Tight down-ballot races may affect Hillsborough voters' lives more than marquee contests." And you mentioned Janet Cruz versus Dana Young. That's for Tampa's State Senate District 18. Why did you call this seat the most critical win in Florida for Democrats?
Well, Florida Democrats right now are 16 to 24 in the 40-member Senate. They're pretty much certain to flip one South Florida State Senate seat. That would make them 17 to 23. If they can flip one more, they're 18 to 22, and that's getting very close to, you know, close to parity with the Republicans. And at that point, they can begin to have a much more significant influence on legislation. All they have to do is convince one or two Republicans to go with their side, and they can actually pass or defeat a bill.
In recent history, we had supermajorities, I guess, in the state legislature.
That's right. Well, we no longer have either of those, I think, in either house. Mm-hmm. But Janet Cruz versus Dana Young in Tampa's State Senate District 18 is probably the Democrats' best chance in the state for a second flip after the one they're sure of in South Florida. Now, there are two or three more where they have good chances. One is Bob Doyle versus Kelly Stargell in a district that includes a lot of Polk County. But Cruz Young is probably their best shot at a second flip. Of course, it would take five flips for them to actually take the majority. That's not very realistic.
Why do Democrats feel like Janet Cruz has a shot at this?
Well, a couple of reasons. It's a heavily Hispanic district. Cruz is Hispanic herself and has a Hispanic last name that'll show up on the ballot. She's been an unchallenged, strong holder of the state House seat that takes up a lot of that district, unchallenged there in a couple of past elections. And it'll probably be maybe the closest state Senate race in Florida.
So you also said in that article, William, that countywide races in Hillsborough are becoming harder for Republicans. What do you mean by that?
Well, Hillsborough is urbanizing very rapidly, and it's gaining quickly in its share of younger voters, millennials and Generation Xers. Now, in 2016, we began to see some of the results of that. Hillary Clinton actually won Hillsborough County, even though she lost the rest of Florida. And that's the first time in recent memory that any Democratic presidential candidate has won in Hillsborough without winning the state as a whole. In that same election, Republicans lost most of the countywide races on the ballot, including a county commission race and a state attorney's race. Essentially, Hillsborough is gradually moving toward the political model that you see in the large, urban, heavily Democratic counties down south, Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach. Of course, it's a long way from that point yet, but it's moving in that direction.
So that's a pretty recent demographic shift then.
Fairly recent, but I mean, if you look around downtown Tampa, you can see it. And those people that you'll see walking the downtown streets at night, filling up little restaurants downtown, they're in their 20s, their 30s, maybe their early 40s. These are millennials and Gen Xers that are moving into Tampa and changing the political character of the county. Of course, now you still have some fairly large rural and suburban and exurban areas, particularly in East Hillsborough, and those are still highly conservative. but they're beginning to be outweighed to some extent by the bluer urban areas of the county.
And you mentioned Kelly Stargell versus Bob Doyle in Polk County.
Right.
That's kind of surprising. That's been a heavily Republican seat.
Well, the Democrats recruited the person they think is their best candidate in that race. I believe he's a former judge. And there's been some polling that shows him running well against Stargell.
And then something I think you both reported on, Zach, State House District 70 with State Representative Wingay Newton. He was challenged in the primary by two fellow Democrats. That was kind of surprising.
Yeah, that was an interesting race. You typically don't see a sitting lawmaker challenged by members of their own party. But Wingay Newton actually upset some people in the Democratic Party because he campaigned for Republican mayor, former mayor Rick Baker, when Rick Baker was trying to upset Rick Kreisman. And he also took some controversial votes. He voted in favor of a beach bill that some people thought would limit beach access. He voted in favor of consolidating USF campuses under one accreditation, which I think some people, especially in St. Petersburg, which is the heart of his district, were worried that USF St. Pete is going to lose some of its independence in that vote. And so he ended up getting two Democrats challenging him. In the end, he won by a fairly comfortable margin, but it was an interesting race nonetheless.
Newton did win by a fairly comfortable margin, probably predictable. Part of the reason, though, was that there were no Republicans running in that race, no write-in candidate, and therefore the primary, the Democratic primary, which normally primaries are open only to voters in that party, but this primary was open to Republicans and independents. And there was a mailer that went out in Wingay Newton's favor by a Republican campaign committee. It angered some Democrats. Newton accused the Democratic Party in Pinellas County of recruiting one of those candidates to run against him. The party denied that, and so did the candidates themselves who ran against him.
So, Zach, former Sarasota State Representative Ray Pilon won his Republican primary and will be taking on Democrat Margaret Good, who's the incumbent for the Sarasota House seat, District 72.
Yeah, Pilon is trying to make a comeback here. He actually decided not to run for reelection. He had Good's seat for 6 years, and then he decided in 2016 to try and run for the state Senate and lost in a primary. And then his Republican successor, Alex Miller, actually resigned halfway through her term, and there was a special election, and Margaret Good won that seat in February in a special election, and kind of a big race, a bit of an upset. That was a district that Donald Trump carried by more than 4 percentage points. It's been held by a Republican for 6 years, like I said, up until she won it. And it was really looked at as sort of a bellwether election. The Washington Post was down in Sarasota reporting on it. It got national attention because it was one of these special elections for a sort of a swing seat that people were really looking at to see which way the political winds were blowing after the election of Donald Trump. And it showed there is some energy on the Democratic side. And Margaret Good was able to win by more than an 11-point swing when you factor in the margin that Trump carried that district by. So that was a pretty blockbuster result. Gave Democrats a lot of momentum. And that now the Republicans are trying to come back, and they've recruited Ray Pilon, who held the seat before, who's got some name recognition. He won his primary fairly easily. But Margaret Good actually has raised way more money than Ray Pilon at this point and is probably considered the favorite.
So who did Margaret Good defeat in February? Was that Vern Buchanan's son, or am I remembering that wrong?
No, that's correct. James Buchanan, Vern Buchanan's son, she defeated him by a healthy margin, more than 7 percentage points. And he actually got right back up and decided to run for another seat. And he won his primary in a district south of that.
Vern Buchanan, what's he been there for, like,
six terms? Yeah, but I think seeing his son lose in that seat was definitely made his campaign nervous. They started doing advertising very early on. He's now going to be facing David Shapiro. That's another local primary result. There was a Democratic primary for the District 16 congressional seat, Vern Buchanan's seat, and the Democrats got the candidate that party leaders think is a stronger candidate, David Shapiro, who beat Jan Schneider, kind of a frequent flyer in terms of running for Congress around here. But Shapiro has raised $1.3 million. He's got the backing of Democratic leaders in D.C. and in Sarasota. And some nonpartisan political handicappers have said that they think this race could be competitive. And I think Vern Buchanan, seeing his son lose in a district that Trump carried, I think he's a little bit nervous. He started advertising very early and even went negative and was attacking David Shapiro in the primary. And some people thought he was trying to knock David Shapiro out of the primary so that he could face what maybe he viewed as a weaker opponent.
So that is District 16, Vern Buchanan's congressional seat. That covers all of Manatee County and parts of Sarasota and Hillsborough counties, traditionally Republican-leaning district.
That's right. Trump carried the district by double digits. So it's considered a bit of a stretch for Democrats. There's not too many seats that Democrats hold that Trump has carried by double digits. So it's an uphill climb for sure.
So Jan Schneider in this race, she ran on kind of an Andrew Gillum style, very progressive platform, Medicare for all, $15 minimum wage, full legalization of marijuana. But it didn't work for her the way it worked for him.
But she came fairly close, actually. I think people were surprised by Shapiro's margin of victory. He only won by 9.5 percentage points, despite just massively, massively outspending her. So there was a little bit of a warning sign for him in that primary that he wasn't able to win by a bigger margin. Now, Schneider has been on the ballot many, many times. She's well known. And also, Vern Buchanan spent a lot of money attacking David Shapiro during the primary, which might have suppressed his vote total a little bit. But the conventional political wisdom would be that in a district that's Republican-leaning like this, you would want to be a little bit more moderate so you could appeal to some of those centrist voters.
I'm Robin Sessingham, and you're listening to Florida Matters. We're taking a short break, and we'll be right back. This is Florida Matters. I'm Robin Sessingham, and we're talking about local and statewide politics on our Reporters Roundtable. I'm here with William March, a longtime political analyst and reporter, and Zach Anderson, political editor of the Sarasota Herald Tribune. Zach, we were talking about Vern Buchanan's seat in District 16. He's going to be facing David Shapiro in the general election. And you said that some polling showed that that could be a competitive election, even though it's traditionally gone Republican. Do you think that that race could attract the kind of outside money from liberal organizations that other Democratic races have?
I certainly do. And one reason that I do is because it already is attracting a huge amount of outside money. There's a group called Floridians for a Fair Shake that has come in and spent six figures. It might even be close to $1 million at this point attacking Buchanan. They've really been going after him aggressively, which is a little bit surprising. This was kind of viewed, again, as a bit of a marginal district, a bit of a reach for Democrats. So the fact that you have outside money coming in and attacking Buchanan, I think shows that they think that they have a shot in this race. I don't think they would spend that kind of money if they didn't think there was a realistic chance of knocking Buchanan off. And they've really gone after him. There's this story that got a lot of attention that he bought an expensive yacht on the same day that the Congress approved the big GOP tax cut bill, and they've been trying to use that as an example of how this tax cut bill is benefiting the 1% and average people aren't reaping the same rewards, and using this yacht as kind of a symbol of that. They're definitely already going after him with outside money, and I think we'll see here in the next few weeks if they're going to invest even more in this race.
William, what other Republicans in our area might be considered vulnerable?
Well, there is one place, and this is a congressional district that includes eastern Hillsborough County and a lot of Polk and a little bit of Lake. It's Congressional District 15, and that's the seat that Dennis Ross has held four, maybe five turns. He had an easy reelect, but then he decided to retire from Congress, and now Democrats believe that they might have a shot there. It's probably not quite as good a shot as District 16, the Vern Buchanan seat that we've been talking about, but they still think they have at least an outside chance. And Democrats recruited a candidate that they believe will be strong, a somewhat centrist, prominent lawyer. One of the advantages of her candidacy is that she has worked in the citrus industry as general counsel for citrus processors. So she, and the citrus industry is very important in that district. Another advantage she may have is that she lives in Lakeland but works in Tampa, and so she bridges the county line between Hillsborough and Polk, the two counties with the most voters in the district.
And what also might help Democrats in that district is that it was just redistricted a couple years ago. So what was a strong Polk County seat, now Ross Spano is the Republican. He's from Hillsborough, and he's a Republican candidate.
That's right.
Candidate.
The, he defeated a Polk County candidate, Neil Comby, to win the Republican nomination. And as you said, Spano is from East Hillsborough. That's where he's best known.
So we've been talking about flipping seats from Republican to Democrat. What about the other way? Any Democrats who are vulnerable in this cycle?
The reason that there are so few possibilities for Republicans to flip Democratic seats, whereas Democrats are looking to flip Republican seats, is that over the last couple of decades, Republicans in control of the Florida legislature have arranged district lines to maximize their number of office holders. That's why there's now 11 Democrats in Congress from Florida compared to 16 Republicans. And what that means is that the few Democrats remaining are in basically invulnerable seats, like Kathy Castor in Tampa. There's no way she can be challenged successfully by a Republican. So basically, Republicans have got all they can get, and all they can do at this point is lose. For Democrats, the question is, where else can they win? How can they expand?
So let's talk about the pollsters and the utter failure of pollsters to adequately predict the outcome of the governor's primary races. Everyone seemed to have been caught off guard by Andrew Gillum's winning the Democratic nomination. Also surprised by how big the margin was in Ron DeSantis's win over Adam Putnam. That was 56-37%, where a lot of polls had them running neck and neck during the campaign. William, what happened?
Well, Robin, something I've said for years, and this is probably one of the best examples of it I've ever seen, it's harder for a pollster to get an accurate result in a primary election than it is in a general election. And the reason for that is primaries are much lower turnout, and the outcome is going to depend on who decides to go to the polls for whatever reason. Whereas general election, you've got a much broader swath of the voters, and a random sample is more likely to be accurate. A similar thing happened to some extent in 2016 when a lot of people were surprised by Trump's win, although in that case, polls did show Trump closing in on Clinton as Election Day approached. But I think what happened is voters who are not regular, normal, reliable voters, the ones who pollsters look at when they choose their samples, suddenly turned up and went to the polls and surprised the pollsters. So the turnout was not what the pollsters would have expected.
It really was pretty shocking to see Gillum win when I don't think he led in a single poll. And a lot of polls had him in fourth place, third place, not even really second place. Now, the polls started to pick up a bit of a surge for him towards the end, but I still don't think anything other than maybe one internal poll from his campaign actually had him in the lead. So they got it pretty wrong on the Democratic side. It's a bit of a hard race to poll, as William mentioned. I mean, having a primary makes it different. Having five candidates makes it different. I think a lot of people waited towards the end to really fully decide who they were going to vote for. And the idea that maybe some non-traditional voters, some low-propensity voters came out for Gillum sounds logical. I think his campaign was targeting them. But it's still very shocking to see a candidate who was never leading and often was third or fourth place in the polls actually pull it out. And on the GOP side, a lot of the polls towards the end, a number of public polls had Putnam within reach of DeSantis, and it ended up being a 19-point win for DeSantis, which is just amazing. And it's a word of caution to journalists, to everyone. You have to really scrutinize these polls, how big the sample size is, how they weight, you know, the people that they're surveying, and whether they're getting a proper look at the electorate. But it really was pretty shocking to see the polls be this off.
Yeah. Political scientist Aubrey Jewett made an interesting comment interviewed by the Tampa Bay Times. I think this was right before the primary, and was asked why Democrats weren't hitting Gillum more on this investigation by the FBI on the corruption in Tallahassee city government. And Aubrey Jewett said that Gillum hadn't polled well enough to warrant those attacks from the Democratic opponents. So that complacence over the polling might have cost them.
The biggest source of attack ads, I think, in the primary was Jeff Green, the Palm Beach billionaire who came in late and spent millions of his own dollars on ads. And his main targets were Gwen Graham and Phil Levine.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they were thought to be the leaders. Gillum simply was not thought to be enough of a threat for the Democrats to attack him. I believe that as of Election Day, the Real Clear Politics polling average in that race still showed Gwen Graham with about a 6 or 7 point lead.
Andrew Gillum is going to face the same problem that any of the others would have faced going into this election, is that he was elected with 2/3 of the people who voted in that primary did not vote for him. So I guess any of them would have gone into the election with that problem.
Well, I think you'll see Democrats unify behind Gillum pretty quickly. He very much appeals to the Democratic Party base. And Gwen Graham, for example, very quickly announced we all have to get behind Gillum as best we can. And I think if there's anything that will unify the Democratic Party, it's opposition to a candidate favored and very closely linked to Donald Trump, which is what Ron DeSantis is.
Kind of a referendum on Donald Trump.
It definitely makes
the
election more of a referendum on Trump.
I agree with that. I think that especially having DeSantis, somebody who's so closely linked to Trump, will have Democrats who might have been on the fence about some of Gillum's more liberal positions probably happy to get behind him. There could be some conservative Democrats, some moderate Democrats who do have questions about a candidate who wants to enact Medicare for all and wants to abolish ICE and wants to raise taxes. I mean, Gillum is probably the most progressive liberal candidate that Democrats have ever nominated in Florida. And he is going to face, I think, some resistance from people who wonder if these are practical policies to pursue in Florida. I think it's probably going to be more amongst independents. And there's going to be a real battle for independents, and a lot of it is going to depend on how independents think about Trump. But there could be some difficulty for him to reach out to independents having more liberal positions like he does.
Right, especially at a time when the economy in Florida is really humming along and people may not be as favorable of some of his positions. Also, I mean, there is a large chunk of voters at this point that are independent, unaffiliated with either party.
Well,
what is it, 30% at this point?
Something like that. For something like more than a decade, maybe for two decades, the percentage of voters affiliated with either of the two major parties has been creeping downward, and the number of no-party voters or minor-party voters has been creeping upward. Probably one of the key constituencies that pollsters missed in attempting to call the Democratic primary is black voters. Now, there aren't figures available yet, and there won't be for a few days, as to what the turnout rate specifically among black voters was. But if you look at the results, it's a very, very clear pattern. The counties with the highest proportion of black voters are the ones where Gillum scored his biggest totals. And the best possible example of that is three counties right here in the Tampa Bay area: Hillsborough County, Pinellas County, and Sarasota. Of those three, Hillsborough has by far the largest proportion of black voters, 30% of all its voters. And this is where Gillum unexpectedly won Hillsborough County by a margin larger than his statewide margin. You go over to Pinellas, proportionally, Pinellas has half as many black voters, and there Gillum lost. Then you go down to Sarasota, which has only 3%, a very small fraction of black voters. And not only did Gillum not win, he actually came in third behind both Graham and Levine. And this pattern repeated itself all across the state.
Mm-hmm.
The other constituency that may have surprised vote pollsters in this election, I think, is young voters. There's an organization called Next Gen America. It's sponsored by a California billionaire named Tom Steyer. And this organization concentrates on registering and turning out young voters. And they worked very hard in Florida, and they may have had an influence
also.
Well,
they poured, Tom Steyer and George Soros poured millions of dollars into Andrew Gillum's campaign.
Right, and Steyer's efforts were devoted to turning out and incentivizing young voters.
Mm-hmm. What happened to the model of the suburban soccer mom who was supposed to be kind of centrist, who a center candidate from either party could appeal to? You would think Gwen Graham would be very appealing to that sort of a voter, whereas Andrew Gillum may not be. Is that still considered in play, that sort of a voter?
Yeah, I think so. I think this is a gamble for Democrats. You know, the conventional political wisdom is that you try to appeal to those people. Like you said, the suburban soccer mom who might not be happy with the way that Trump has comported himself and who might have some regrets about the 2016 election and to try and win those people over to your side. And a lot of people thought that Gwen Graham could appeal across party lines. I talked to numerous Republicans who thought that she would be a stronger candidate and who actually expressed admiration for Gwen Graham, but she didn't excite the base like Gillum has. And for the first time, Florida Democrats decided to go with one of these more exciting base type candidates.
That's Zach Anderson, the political editor of the Sarasota Herald Tribune. We've also been speaking with William March, a longtime political reporter and correspondent for the Tampa Bay Times. Thank you both so much for being here.
Enjoyed it, Robin.
Thanks a lot.
And we always want to hear from you. There are lots of ways to reach us. You can tweet us at Florida Matters or leave a comment on WUSF's Facebook page or email us at floridamatters@wusf.org. You'll hear more of this conversation on our podcast, Florida Matters More. You'll find a link on the homepage of our website, wusf.org, or search for Florida Matters More wherever you get your podcasts. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. The engineer is George Gauvin. The producer is Roberto Roldan. I'm Robin Sussingham. Thanks for listening.